What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lakers Outsiders podcast. I am Gary Kester. Hani Amadian is not with me again today. Hani, if you listen to this, I miss you. But I do have somebody with me today. I am not all by myself. I am joined by a friend of Lakers Outsiders, Mike Garcia. You can find him on Twitter at Canyon Driver. Mike, a ton of news these past couple days, past couple hours, I guess. How you holding up, man?
It's a lot of news all at once, that's for sure.
Yeah, I said this before we went on, but I'm going to try my best not to just laugh at the Boston Celtics throughout this entire entire podcast. They are unraveling right now, and I'm enjoying every second of it. So
I'm ready. It's good to win either on the court or off the court. If we win this offseason, all the better.
I'm all for it. I am all for it. All right. Before we get started, got to plug all of our outlets and our platforms. If you like the Lakers Outsiders podcast, you can subscribe to us on YouTube, on iTunes, on Podbean, and on Spotify. So be sure to do that. You can also find all of our content on LakersOutsiders.com. Follow us on Twitter at Lakers Outsiders and like us on Facebook as well. All right. With that out of the way, we got a lot to talk about. It's been a couple days and we haven't been able to get a pod up, but the Lakers have a deal in place to get Anthony Davis from the New Orleans Pelicans. Basically, the deal centers around the Lakers getting Davis in exchange for Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, and a few first-round picks, including the number 4 pick in Thursday's 2019 NBA draft. Mike, I'm going to keep it pretty simple on this first question. I mean, what was your initial reaction to the deal?
Initially, I was surprised. I didn't think they needed to throw that many players and picks into the trade, considering I thought the Lakers had all the leverage. I didn't think other teams were offering their best players ahead as well. So just right off the bat, I just felt they overpaid.
Yeah, I was disappointed to see both Ingram and Lonzo Ball both in the deal. I felt like Josh Hart was going to be necessary probably no matter how the deal was swung. But yeah, like you said, I said this on our last pod. To me, it was a one horse race. Like, I don't think the Celtics were seriously going after him, and I don't think that they were ever going to offer Jason Tatum, no matter how much, you know, there might be smoke and mirrors with that. And especially now, you know, with this news that just dropped within probably the last hour or so, that Kyrie Irving has basically, according to Shams Charania, he's basically let the Celtics know he's not coming back. And then Al Horford is reportedly not going to come back either. He opted out of his deal. And the latest report is that he's going to be gone. So the Celtics really have no inclination to make any kind of offer. So now it's, you know, it's looking like the Lakers gave up a lot. But I mean, at the end of the day, getting a player like Davis, you still got to consider this deal a win, right?
You have to. I mean, he's actually one of my favorite players. Personally, I have him over Giannis just because of his ability to shoot, even as a big. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the Lakers have been spoiled getting, you know, a top 5 or a top 10 player. It seems like every decade since the 70s. And then here we have Anthony Davis. And now it's all about trying to build around him and making a competitive roster for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we're both on the same page that we think the Lakers probably overpaid a little bit. The good thing that this trade package does, with including Ball and Ingram alongside Hart, is that it frees up or it gets them fairly close to matching outgoing salary with incoming salary with Davis's, I think, is $27 million deal, which gives them an avenue to add another max player to LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I mean, do you think that that kind of weighed into those discussions and the reason maybe that they didn't want to trade Kyle Kuzma as well?
I definitely think so. I mean, the Lakers have been hunting free agents, it seems like, for years, and it hasn't always been about Anthony Davis as well. So it wouldn't be surprising to me if the Lakers went ahead and made the deal with some plan ahead of time to, hey, we're going to go after Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard or whoever else may be available, and then just present to them, look, we made the move. We're setting up the team. Let's get this thing ready before draft day if possible. If not, we can wait it off and then develop the roster from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's everything that's unfolding is very interesting. And I think, I mean, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, but I think another thing that factored into the deal, I think there were kind of a number of things. I think the optics of trying the deal again and not coming through again would be very problematic, especially, you know, with the mentality of the young players, like throwing in Lonzo and Ingram and Josh Hart. Like, it seemed like those guys were not really upset over the deal. Like, it was almost like they're relieved to have it all done and over with, and they can kind of get a fresh start and move on. So I think there was that factor. But how much do you think that it factored in with Golden State's injuries, with Kevin Durant, you know, being out probably most or all of next season, and Klay Thompson probably the same way? He'll probably miss most of the season. So the West is very winnable right now. And so how much do you think that factored in where the Lakers said, we got to go for it? We've got LeBron James right now at age 34 and all that.
I think that this was always the plan all along. And regardless of what happened during the finals with Golden State and their unfortunate injuries, I mean, Durant did what he could, and Klay Thompson played on an ACL to just make a couple free throws. But it just presented an opportunity to say, hey, the West is really wide open. There is a path to getting to the title, and it might be sooner than later. So it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, the whole idea of being patient with the roster and developing with them just kind of got pushed aside when this opportunity presented itself.
Yeah, and we mentioned the whole free agent dynamic of this, where they're creating or trying to create as much cap space as they can to get a full max slot. You'd have to think Pelinka, in the back of his mind at the very least, was thinking, we've got to get Anthony Davis now, so that we can, that's their free agent pitch, right? Is LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Absolutely. And just right off the bat, that's pretty much two of the five players that are remaining on the roster, right? The thing is, it's really easy to build around that. And you have two dynamic players that are willing to speak up, and they play like it on the floor as well. So whoever comes in next, whether it's a role player or a star player, it makes their job a lot easier. And there's just a lot easier path to get success in the playoffs and hopefully win that championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, obviously if they do sign a max guy, they're not going to really have any cap space to go sign anybody else. They'll have to use, you know, the exceptions that kind of come with being strapped financially. I'd have to think that even a trio, if the third max guy is like a Kemba Walker or Jimmy Butler, I mean, you'd have to think that a lot of guys would be lining up to play for cheap to go after a championship.
Exactly. And not just to keep in mind of being mindful of LeBron James's window for his tenure as a Laker, but there's actually a period after that where it's going to be this third max guy and Anthony Davis. That's still an amazing core to build around as well.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what makes it so funny to me that so many people have compared this to the Nets and Celtics trade of a few years ago, where the Nets acquired a bunch of over-the-hill guys in Garnett, Pierce, and Jason Terry. Anthony Davis just turned 26 a couple months ago. Like, he's entering his prime. And, like, the Lakers have found their franchise cornerstone, even after LeBron. So I think that was another dynamic that made this, like, the Lakers had to get this done. Like, he was there for the taking, and so you had to go get him. And I, you know, even though I think we both kind of think they overpaid, I think getting their guy is, you know, I kind of tip my cap to him at least a little bit in that respect. So, all right. Another thing with this too, is we've talked about kind of the financial thing, and there was a big deal made about it. And it is kind of a big deal that if this deal was to wait until the 30th of July, the Lakers would be able to use the fourth pick, basically, kind of for salary cap reasons, right, where it would free up enough room for a max slot. It doesn't appear like that's the case. It sounds like the deal is going to be done July 6th. And Anthony Davis also has a $4 million trade bonus that he can waive that'll give the Lakers that $4 million in extra space. But now it looks like they're trying to, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, they're trying to trade Mo Wagner, Isaac Bonga, and Jamario Jones. So to just basically free up as much space as they can, and they would have to take back like second round picks just to make sure they're not bringing back any salary. So one question I had for you, and because I've seen you talk about it on Twitter a lot, and I think it's an interesting discussion, but the front office, even though they got an Anthony Davis, I think they still need to prove that they can build a roster, right? And I think they need to prove that process matters over just the results, right? And to me, even though they got Davis, there's still reason to have doubt with this front office because of that kind of stuff, right?
Absolutely. My primary concern is, you know, all over Twitter, we keep talking about guys like, oh, Seth Curry, and, oh, we'll find another shooter. Maybe we'll throw a contract at Danny Green, and so-and-so player will just be readily available for the veteran minimum. And that hasn't been the path for the Lakers squad. If anything, they go to their nearest relationships first. We've seen it in the front office, and we've seen it with the roster. So it just really wouldn't surprise me if the remaining backcourt slots are Rajon Rondo and KCP. And I'm just bracing myself for that. But I just have a hunch that it's going to happen.
Yeah, there's already been some talk that I think it was Brad Turner of the LA Times reporting that the Lakers want Rondo to come back, which is really frustrating because, in my opinion, he hasn't played defense in probably about 6 or 7 years at the very least. And, you know, I get the whole leadership thing, but at the same time, I'm like, there are no young players to, you know, that you need a guy like that for, right? Like Lonzo Ball is going to be gone. Ingram's going to be gone. Hart. Kuzma's really the only guy, but Kuzma's going to be, you know, have a couple years under his belt. And I mean, it's going to be a win now mode team, right? Like there's not going to be a ton of that. And you have that veteran leadership with LeBron and with Anthony Davis, and you can get some cheap veterans like that, right?
Absolutely. If anything, we keep hanging on to the idea that, hey, Rajon Rondo is going to be a good pickup because he'll play well with Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. And when Marcus Cousins got hurt a while back, they made a great run towards the playoffs and they went on a string of wins. And Rondo in the second half of that season didn't play like the first half of that season. Anthony Davis played really well too. Sure, if I felt like that was going to happen this upcoming season, that'd be great. I'm not really confident after what I saw last season. So fingers are crossed, but otherwise, I'd rather see the ball in LeBron's hands anyways and see he and LeBron run pick and roll instead, you know?
Well, and it's like, I really don't want Rondo to be the starting point guard. And to me, if you want a backup point guard, you have Alex Crusoe sitting there, and to me has earned his way into that spot based on his play. I mean, the last couple of years, but especially last year, I thought he played exceptionally well. So I don't get the whole Rondo thing. I really don't. But hey, maybe we'll get playoff Rondo, and if he is there, and maybe, I don't know, maybe we'll both look wrong. Who knows? But yeah, I don't get it. But yeah, no, it's interesting though to see how they're going to fill out the rest of this roster, like what kind of guys they're going to look for. Because I mean, because to me, once they got LeBron last year, I like the JaVale McGee pickup, but other than that, it was just a whole lot of like, what are we doing? You know, so
it definitely got to a point where last season we were just watching the South Bay Laker team playing with a lot more effort.
Right.
And they were just outplaying the veterans at this point, where, and Jonathan Williams made the squad from preseason. And then all of a sudden we saw him play decent pick and roll defense. He was running towards the rim. He was protecting it on the defensive end as well. Caruso kind of came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, like, he just played peak form Caruso for a good 2-3 months over there. It's like, why are we playing Rondo at this point? It's, and then, you know, we pull up all the advanced stats, and then they just showed up in Caruso's favor so drastically. It's like, why are we even considering Rondo? It doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, props to those guys. They did an amazing job at the second half of the season, in a season that kind of got lost and lost their playoff contention altogether. But admittedly, I wouldn't mind seeing them come back as well.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing what effort can do on the basketball court, right?
Young legs.
Yeah, and So, I mean, even though, you know, you have probably the best duo in the league in Davis and LeBron, the front office definitely has a lot of work to do, not only with chasing max free agents and things like that. I mean, because they're 12 to 15 spots on a roster, right? So they've definitely got their work cut out for them. But the foundation is definitely there with this trade. I mean, Davis and LeBron, you're talking about arguably two top five players in the league. You know, two. I like how, I can't remember who put it this way, but somebody did. You have two guys that could legitimately win MVP. Like two legit MVP candidates on the same roster. So, and before we kind of move on into some draft stuff, I'm curious what you think of the fit between those two with Davis and LeBron. Personally, I really like it. I mean, we haven't obviously seen it on the court, but in theory, I guess, how do you think that those two will fit on the court together?
So one of the things I've noticed with championship runs outside of Golden State is really that it's still a wing league with a skilled big, right? You saw that with Shaq and Kobe forever, right? In San Antonio's case, they ran pick and roll with Parker and Duncan, or even Ginobili and Duncan, and they did really well with that. Mm-hmm. And this, and even with Houston more recently, I mean, Clint Capella isn't that tier of talent, but between him and Harden, they're still an incredibly effective offensive team, right? Yeah. They're still going to run pick and roll. Harden doesn't really settle for that mid-range shot, and yet they're finding themselves repeatedly second round in the West. It almost doesn't matter how much the roster changes. You know, with the seventh, eighth, and ninth guy, they just find their way back there. So now with LeBron and Anthony Davis, it's like, oh, hey, we got that formula now, right? We got two critical parts of the main equation.
Yeah.
How we balance everything out so that we can keep defenses on their feet and shifting around. And with LeBron and Anthony Davis, it really doesn't get that much better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I just thought of this on the spot. But I think even, because I think me and you are both in kind of the same mindset in terms of small guards in the playoffs, typically doesn't yield great results. So if they get a guy like Kemba Walker, right? You'd have to think that having a LeBron and an Anthony Davis that he can kind of play off of, and he would get less attention, obviously, that he has with Charlotte. You think, I mean, if the Lakers were able to get Kemba Walker, how do you think that would translate both in the regular season and in the playoffs?
This is where the draft knowledge actually helps. I remember way back at UConn where I didn't initially think of Kemba as a pure point guard, and he was kind of like a two guard in a point guard body, and he went out to score, and then he learned how to pass later on. Uh-huh. And fast forward to now where Kemba's kind of like at his peak, and what's he doing? He's, I don't know, I guess he's, what, high 30s to low 40s% behind the arc on 7 attempts. That's a lot of catch-and-shoot opportunities. That's a lot of opportunities off the dribble. And he can just feed off that off-guard position that seems to be a little bit more natural to him anyway.
Right.
So if my option is, hey, if I'm LeBron and I'm running pick-and-roll and our first option is Anthony Davis, I'm basically a power wing at this point, and I have Kemba at my corner, this is going to be a lot of trouble for defenses, period.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think, because like I said, I think small guards in the playoffs typically they can really struggle. But, man, playing next to LeBron and, mm-hmm. and Anthony Davis certainly changes most equations, if not all of them. So, it'll be really interesting. It's June 18th when we're recording this. June 30th cannot get here fast enough. I'm excited. I mean, stuff's already happening. Like I mentioned, the Celtics are reeling right now. The Rockets, there's a bunch of rumors about Chris Paul wanting out and all kinds of stuff. So this offseason is going to be crazy. But first thing on the agenda for the offseason is going to be the NBA draft here in a couple of days. So latest report, like I mentioned earlier, that the Lakers are trying to shed extra salary with those three players and Wagner, Bonga, and Jones. And then Wojnarowski added that the Lakers are looking to buy second-round picks. For those of you that don't follow Mike on Twitter, Mike is one of my favorite talent evaluators in the NBA draft. has a really great track record and is always one of my favorite things about meeting up with Mike at Summer League is just talking about prospects and kind of evaluating talent and things like that. So Mike, with this deal, the Lakers don't currently have a pick in this upcoming draft, but if they are looking to buy a second round pick, there are some teams out there with multiple second round picks. Who are some second round guys that you'd be looking at, or possibly even some undrafted free agent players?
So, because it's the Lakers and I don't really trust the front office just quite yet, we haven't bought any picks. I'll just start with some undrafted players. There are a couple guys from Iowa State that really stick out. For those who don't know, Iowa State kind of played like a modern NBA team in that they tried to roll out 3-4 guard lineups with a big. And what happened with that is we saw a lot of, they were one of the higher scoring teams in college basketball, but they played with a lot of pace. They found the open man. They opted for that three-point shot. And if it wasn't a three-point shot, it was rarely a mid-range shot. It was something at the rim. Mm-hmm. So two guys from Iowa State that come to mind are Muriel Shayok, who was a wing player for them, and Lindell Wigginton, who is a guard and actually worked out for the Lakers before. Shayok is basically, he's basically a 6'5 wing with a 7-foot wingspan. He's actually age 24. And the thing is, here, give me a quick minute. Let me just pull up the numbers because I'm kind of always blown away every time I look. But
I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, so just offensively speaking, you know, it's always critical to gear around LeBron. This time we're actually going to get shooters and hopefully not just go for playmakers like the Lakers did last year, right?
Right.
Free agency or draft. So spot up, 77th percentile. Transition, 69th percentile. Pick and roll, ball handler, 87th percentile. Not that he needs to run the pick and roll. He's going to be playing with LeBron and hopefully another great wing or elite guard. But just knowing that he's in that percentile anyway shows some degree of decision making, like he can make that initial read.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite thing is really this. Catch and shooting in the half court overall is 87th percentile. Unguarded, he's in the 90th percentile at an excellent rating, and he shot over 50% from the field. It's really difficult to get that level of shooter anywhere.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be looked highly upon because of his age and his defensive ability, but sometimes you just need a guy that can shoot threes and get buckets, and he can do that in spot up and off the dribble as well.
I mean, everybody loves scoring, right? And the thing is, getting efficient scorers like that, I think, I mean, especially to come off your second unit, right? You don't want your second unit to be such a drop-off on either side of the court, obviously. But, you know, I think you see a lot of successful teams have guys that can come off the bench and can still kind of keep up that scoring production. So yeah, like players like that are very important. And I'll be curious to see too. I mean, the undrafted free agents, because the Lakers are certainly going to have some. I mean, every team does. And the scouting department has shown in years past that they've done a pretty good job. I don't know if the report, there have been multiple reports, I guess, that Wagner was not their pick last year. That was kind of a magic pick. So I'll be curious to see how Pelinka values the input of the scouting department, because, like I said, they've done an excellent job the past few years, especially finding value late in the first round. And even like a guy like Jordan Clarkson a few years back at 46. I mean, he's certainly a flawed player, but 46th pick in the draft, you can certainly do a lot worse than a guy like Jordan Clarkson. So, all right. So what teams, I guess, are you looking at for the Lakers to potentially buy a second round pick or two? I guess I wouldn't count on two, but just maybe at least one second round pick from and maybe a player that you've got, player or two you got an eye on in that range.
So there are two teams with three second rounders. It's the Atlanta Hawks and the 76ers. So the 76ers have 33, 34, and 42. Considering this draft, that's prime position, really.
Mm-hmm.
The tier of players within that general range is basically the same tier of talent anyway. So the value of the guy at 33 might be the same as 42. It's really hard to tell with this particular draft. It's just not as strong at the top compared to previous years. But let's just say that they went and got the 42nd pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it from an approach of best player available instead of fit, only because these are unproven players, right? You know, every team has talent. That's the best way I can phrase that. So hopefully at the 42nd pick, I would hope that someone like Shamori Ponce would actually land at that spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a good spot for him to be as a Laker too, because he's a junior and he's a little bit older, so he's actually played a little bit more physical basketball at St. John's. But the thing is, he's a shifty guy that's really good at catch and shoot and pull up shots off the dribble. People are going to be discouraged by his 6'3 wingspan, but the hardest thing to account for is he has really great hand-eye coordination, and that goes defensively.
Mm.
It's like, you know, there are instances throughout the season where we'll see the opposing team grab a rebound and throw a pass down court, kind of like a Lonzo Ball transition pass. And Shamori is basically making that read, and he just intercepts it, and the length doesn't matter. He just gets to the spot and then turns it right back over and then turns it into a transition opportunity the other way. Mm-hmm. He might get ran on defense in the half court, but if he's able to make those kinds of defensive plays, then he'd be a great pick at 42.
Yeah, no, I haven't looked personally into Pons too much, but I have seen a lot of noise about him and a lot of people that really like what he has to bring to the table. And the thing with buying a second round pick too is there's a pretty wide range, I think, of picks you could buy. I mean, like you said, you can get 42, you could get 59, you know, you never know. And those are huge differences in terms of players that are going to be available, even though there might not be a huge talent gap, in any particular draft between like picks like that. But it could change things drastically. So I'm curious to see what picks are going to really be available, and really what the Lakers are looking to do, where they're looking to jump into this draft and what type of players they're looking for. I pray that they follow your mold and look for guys that can put the ball in the basket, because the way they filled out the roster last year was very frustrating in looking for like basically just playmakers only. And it would be nice, obviously, if Kuzma gets back to kind of his rookie year of shooting. He shot 36% from three, and was 30% last year. So hopefully the shooting as a whole gets better, that just the shot making and you know, you get some playmaking, some defense in there with that as well, would be great. Obviously, it's harder to find guys like that in the second round, but those players are definitely out there. I think you see it fairly often. I mean, at least a quality rotation player seems to be found in the second round. So, I mean, heck, a guy like Malcolm Brogdon is probably going to get paid pretty well this offseason. It was picked in the second round. So they're definitely out there. They're definitely out there. But I'm curious, because I'm always curious with people that have a passion for talent evaluation in the NBA draft and NFL draft or whatever. Kind of, I guess my first question about this is how exactly do you evaluate players? Like, is there a certain kind of standard or process that you follow? And like, what kind of things do you look for when you're looking at a prospect?
So I've tried to come with a standardized way of looking at each prospect equally. And I admit sometimes it comes easily through highlights, but it boils down to the one question of what does a player do best? Mm-hmm. Right, that can account for either side of the floor, whether it's shooting, defense, forcing turnovers, whatever it might be. I think you're well aware that I'm a huge D'Anthony Melton fan, and I would like to announce that louder. And I mean, I see him in Phoenix right now, right? And it seemed kind of questionable because he wasn't exactly the most pure point guard with the vision or the purest shooter out there, but at least defensively I knew, hey, this guy forces turnovers. He sees guys not only on his individual defense, but on team defense, and even in transition, he seeks the ball out and is really good at it. And fast forward to today, he's got inconsistent playing time under his belt, but even per 36, he's still good for 2.5 steals and over almost a block from the two-guard position, which is just super rare to get. So as long as they have that one thing they do best against elite competition, that's a good way to start. What ancillary skill complements that ability is great. So, for example, when I see Melton, okay, I know he could play defense, right? But I can see that he pushes the ball up in transition, he makes decent reads, and he's an adequate shooter but needs to improve. This guy's going to be a late first, second round pick. I'm willing to take those risks for that defensive ability alone. Now, I've got a two-way player with these abilities and the measurements test out, the athletic abilities test out. That's my pick. In this kind of draft, it's, as I've mentioned before, it's not as deep at the top, but the tier of second round picks is just, it's really deep. It's 20 to 30 players deep. You know, I mean, I mentioned Chimori Pons. I've seen him as high as, you know, the late first round all the way down to the end of second. Personally, I'd rank him higher for the same two-way ability that I mentioned to you. He's shown some ability to force turnovers, but he can shoot. He's got shake. Those are rare qualities out of a player. I would absolutely expect him to be an effective player next level.
Right. Yeah, I definitely – I've seen that be a – fairly common answer, I think, is finding a player that kind of has that elite skill, right? Like has something that they're very good at. And, you know, I think it's why a guy like Jarrett Culver, I think, has been a little polarizing, because I think he's kind of a jack of all trades, but I don't know if there's an elite skill there. I think he's a good prospect, but yeah, like, I think we've talked about that and maybe the group DM or whatever, but, yeah, I mean, just like players like that, like it's really interesting to see kind of certain people value something like that, like a guy that can do multiple things versus like, he doesn't really have like that elite skill. So that's really interesting as well. But you mentioned earlier, talking about best player available, versus kind of fit or team need. If you could just kind of expand on your opinion of that and kind of how it factors into really your evaluations.
Sure. So, as I mentioned before, every team needs talent. I would talk to Jacob Rood about this, about, hey, we got Kobe, even though we had two all-stars in front of him, and Eddie Jones and Nick Van Exel, but we still got Kobe for a reason, right?
Yeah.
That's available even with two all-stars ahead of him. Now, just because there's all-stars on the team doesn't mean that, oh, my position is sealed. You can always find a better one, hopefully. So yeah. Even more recently, the Lakers found their way to get Kyle Kuzma. Larry Nance Jr. isn't on the team anymore, sadly. Same with Julius Randle. Mm-hmm. Kuzma was kind of seen as the replacement because of his ability to shoot and creative ways to finish around the rim. He had perimeter abilities that Randle and Nance just didn't have. And even right now, he's the last man standing of the youth core, right?
Yeah.
So just the fact that it was that late first round pick, I mean, I look at Randle now, I'm looking at a 2010 guy. Like, we let go of a 2010 guy for Kuzma, he better be amazing. And sure, the shooting hasn't proven itself to be as consistent as we'd like it to be, but his credibility as a perimeter threat, because he plays like a wing on offense from a four spot, is super important and super valuable for the modern NBA now. Everything is based on spacing, and he gives the spacing that Randle and Nance just couldn't provide.
Yeah, I remember talking about that, I think with Jacob and maybe somebody else, when they drafted Kuzma on this pod, and we were just kind of wondering aloud about that. Like, we liked Kuzma the player, but at the time we were kind of just thinking, like, you know, they've got Randle and Nance, you know, in front of him. So it's like, where exactly are we going to get this kid some playing time and things like that. But I don't know if it differs between like the NBA and NFL in terms of best player and fit. It feels like the NFL, they lean more towards kind of roster needs. I guess in certain cases, I mean, I think certain teams in any sport will just go best player available, or they'll go with need, whatever. But I think especially with basketball, where it's a 15-man roster, right? And you're trying to, and especially the way the game is kind of transforming to, where it's a lot of kind of, you see a lot more like small ball lineups than you used to back in the day. It's a lot of kind of interchangeable players, like trying to keep guys that can, or get guys that can play like multiple positions and things like that. So I think going best player available is probably something, if the league continues to trend that way. And I mean, eventually it's going to trend back the other way, I would think. But I think it's more, I don't know, I don't want to say like more beneficial, but I can understand kind of the tendency to go best player available, especially now, for some of those reasons. So, but like you said, I like that what you said about it. Every team needs talent, you know, talent kind of comes first and foremost, I think. And, so it's always interesting for me to see who kind of values just best player available, even if, you know, they might not have, you know, an immediate spot for that player, which I think a lot of people get kind of caught up in players that are drafted, you know, what's going to happen with them right away. And I'm curious what your thoughts on this, but like, I always try and tell people, when you're drafting a player, you're not drafting them for their rookie season. I mean, you obviously would like them to produce as a rookie, but a lot of times it doesn't happen, at least not to the level that you would hope. So, I mean, that has to factor in. I mean, I would think it factors in somewhere along the way that your expectations are not there right away, but you're hoping down the line, this is what this player becomes.
No, I totally agree with that. You're definitely not drafting for rookie production. It's great when it happens because it shows that, hey, you drafted a player for that one or two elite skills and it shows on the floor. Great. But you're drafting a player for basically their next 10 years, right? You want to see their development and how that curve stays consistent all throughout their career. So by the time they're, let's say, between 24 to 29 and they're coming around to their second NBA contract, that's when it matters. Because Now you're getting some, oh, this is what the player is going to look like near peak or at peak level. This is who they are. This is what they do. We know what to expect now because they've proven themselves. So, well, in reference to the NFL, I just think there's so many players on the field. There's a lot of holes to plug in, right? With the NBA, five players on the court, just there's so much talent within one position. You just need to throw the best talent on the floor, period. When there's that many players on a football field, on the other hand, if you're weak at linebacker, I'm just going to attack that all the time. Even if you're really strong at corner, why should I? Right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm glad you made that point, because I was going to add that too, that just the roster sizes and construction are all so different from the sports, but there are some kind of philosophies that kind of align between the sports, which is always fun to see. But all right, last draft, I guess, evaluation question I have for you is another one that I think a lot of people have very differing opinions on, and that's measurables versus production. Some people value production more than measurables, and, you know, some people, I don't know, some people lean the other way. How do you kind of see that, and how does it factor into when you're evaluating a player for the NBA draft?
Okay, so this could be a very complicated question, so I'm going to try to lay it out as simply as possible. One player that's kind of polarizing that's related to the subject is Brandon Clark. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he's a 6'8 guy with a 6'8 wingspan who doesn't play wing and isn't really a primary playmaker. How do we expect him to be an effective NBA player? And when you see him on the floor, you're looking for certain indicators that show that, hey, I think he could do this against NBA guys, not just college guys as well, right?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, outside of Zion, he's probably the top defensive player. We see how his athletic abilities show defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not as strong of a defensive rebounder as we would like, but that guy, he's just so good at verticality, being on time on team rotation, blocking shots at the rim, and not being foul prone. That's an amazing skill to have, even for a smaller big. If you have a guy that you can throw in front of the rim and he can protect it and he's not the center, that's a big defensive advantage right off the bat. That's his best skill by far. But offensively, and I'm just looking for indicators, right? He's not a pure shooter. I can accept that. But what I do see is he'll grab a rebound, he'll push up court, and he'll make good decisions in transition with his passing, or he finishes really amazingly well around the rim off his own drives within 5 feet from the hoop. Those were NBA translatable skills, and at that point, he's kind of compensated for his 6'8 wingspan by these elite abilities, and you know, elite competition hasn't deterred him from being that effective. So if he shows it, great. If they don't show it, then you're kind of looking at indicators with measurables. This takes me to a whole other topic. let's throw out a hypothetical here. If I see, let's say I'm looking at Chimori Pons and he's 6 foot, 6'3 wingspan. Do I expect him to be a good NBA defender? I mean, that's relative for a guard, right? Whatever that expectation might be. But does he have a knack about forcing turnovers, you know, closing out to shooters, and just kind of having a nose for the ball? He actually does. It's really surprising that a guy that isn't, I mean, being 6 foot with a 6'3 wingspan isn't average NBA size anymore. Guards are just bigger now. They're almost wings at this point with Lonzo Ball and Gilgeous Alexander. They're 6'6", 6'7", at this point, right?
Yeah.
But Pons has proven it at the collegiate level, whether it was getting his own shot or, you know, just being able to force turnovers defensively. I don't think he's going to be as bad as some might anticipate him to be. And he makes the best out of the physical tools that he has. So, yeah, I would expect him to be a good player next level as well.
Yeah, all this stuff is always really interesting to me. So I always love this time of year with the draft and talent evaluation and things like that. And it's something I love to do when I get time to really look into it. And I'm really hoping that the Lakers can buy a second round pick or two or possibly just at least get some solid undrafted free agent options. And I don't know if I ever mentioned this earlier, but if anybody's wondering about, because we mentioned that the Lakers are trying to clear as much cap space as they can so they can free up that max slot. Unsigned second round picks do not have a cap hold. So that's why there's value in buying those and having second round picks in this kind of scenario where it doesn't count against the cap. And you can get a young, cheap player and hopefully they pan out. And, you know, it's a guy that you find later in the draft, maybe a guy like Josh Hart, who I know was technically the last pick of the first round, but same kind of concept. So fingers crossed the Lakers can buy a pick or two and add another young player, because most of them are headed to New Orleans. So I hate laughing about that, because I'm very sad to see those players go. But all right, well, that's going to do it for us. Mike, I always appreciate you coming on. Like I said, I always love talking to you this time of year and talking about the draft. And hopefully you'll be at Summer League. As I mentioned earlier, you can follow Mike on Twitter at Canyon Driver. If you're looking for NBA draft analysis and just basketball analysis, you definitely want to follow Mike, one of my favorite follows out there. So as I mentioned before, you can subscribe to the Lakers Outsiders podcast on YouTube, on iTunes, Podbean, and now on Spotify. You can find all of our content on LakersOutsiders.com. Excuse me. Follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. As always, I thank you guys for listening. And Mike, again, thank you so much for coming on. And looking forward to talking to you more before Thursday's draft. Hopefully I can get you back on and we can talk about some second round picks that the Lakers have, right?
You get it then.
All righty. Well, that's going to do it for us this time. For Mike, I am Gary. Until after the draft, we will see you guys later.